interrupt this broadcast to bring you this important bulletin from the United Press. Flash, Washington.
We interrupt our program to bring you a special broadcast. The German news agency...
We interrupt this program to bring you a news bulletin from Washington. The White House has just announced...
Here is a news bulletin. Shots have reportedly been fired.
Here's another late development, and this news keeps coming in.
This is an NBC News hotline report.
Special report. Verdict sparks violence. National Guard...
secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Can your hearts stand the shocking facts of the true story of Joshua P. Warren?
From the land of the sky and to high strangers around the globe, this is Speaking of Strange with Joshua P. Warren.
And the world is becoming more and more insane every day. Welcome to the program that gives you breaking news and insight regarding the paranormal and downright weird, where the unusual becomes usual. And we don't just discuss it, we go in the field to investigate. Here's a strange one from Taiwan. The pickled head of a 36-year-old woman was discovered in a toilet bowl in a public place. Why in the world would someone pickle a head and leave it in a public toilet? Well, they believe the woman's 37-year-old brother did this to her. The brother was taken into custody after police found surveillance video footage of him carrying bags of, quote, unidentified objects, end quote. They think that he took it into an area around a train station to dispose of the head. At this point, no one knows why. Why go to the trouble to pickle the head? It's one thing to murder somebody, cut their head off, and get rid of it, but makes you think maybe he'd been hanging out with this thing for a while. Pretty creepy, huh? Well, thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, author of books like Haunted Asheville, How to Hunt Ghosts, and The Secret Wisdom of Kukulcan. I am founder and president of Lemur Paranormal Investigations. My producer and engineer is Mr. Hardwood Forrest Connor. Good evening, Forrest.
Good evening, Joshua. Welcome back.
Thank you, sir. It is good to be back here in the mountains, a nice balance between the islands and the mountains. But, you know, the crazy thing is I'm about to turn right around and head back down working on this big TV project.
You are indeed.
And, of course, I not only just returned from the Isle of Enchantment, Puerto Rico, but also investigator Shelley Wright of Wright's Coin Shop. Welcome back to you, Shelley.
Thank you very much.
And, you know, I always talk about, as I recently did, how that a lot of weird and tragic stuff happens in late April, right? And so the day I set out on my journey via Charlotte to go down to Puerto Rico, I hear in the news about this bombing in Boston. And I realize, oh, crap. How far is this going to go now? You know, you don't want to be traveling when things like this are happening. And, yes, as fate would have it, my experience traveling down to the islands this time was one of the worst airport experiences I've ever had in my entire life. You kind of lucked out, didn't you, Shelley?
I did. But I had a special little something I carried with me.
Ah, a little magical charm, maybe.
A little magical charm, which I shared with you for your return.
Yeah, my return was extremely smooth.
See?
So I know what to take with me on journeys from here on out.
Yes.
But if you watched the news recently, you may have seen it made national news headlines that American Airlines had probably the biggest computer snafu in history. All of their computers all over the country just went down at once, and it ended up being down basically for a whole day. And the funny thing is, yes, I was flying American Airlines, and I was absolutely perfectly timed to see the crap hit the fan here. Okay, it could not have been better. If you're going to do it right, just take on the brunt of the entire storm. I was literally looking at the computers when they went down. I was looking at the monitors, and they went, boop.
No.
And then, you know, after that, the American Airlines logos pop up. Now, let me tell you what's so strange about this particular flight. I have flown down to Puerto Rico many, many times, and usually you go by way of Miami or something like that. In this particular case, my flight ended up going from Charlotte to Dallas, Texas, to Puerto Rico. Way out of the way.
Well, that's what you get when you get the cheapest. You probably got the most
probably,
cheapest flight.
I probably did. I certainly was not being very careful about looking at the complete itinerary, which I will do that from now on. So here I am in Texas when this happens. So, well, the computers go down, and of course they come on the intercom and say, "Well, we have a little delay here. It might be 15, 20 minutes." Okay, I'm used to that. Well, then an hour later, everybody's wondering, "God, how long is this going to go on?" 2 hours later, people are starting to get really ornery, and when I really started getting worried was when I could overhear these gate agents getting really curt and nasty with people. I mean, because people are coming up to the counter and the gate agents are saying, "Look, we don't know anything. All the computers are down. We have no information whatsoever." And I'm thinking, this is not good. What do they mean they have no information whatsoever? You know? And then they said, "Okay, go to another gate."
Get out of our hair.
We don't want to see you anymore.
So we go to another gate, and then they say from there, go to another gate. And then go. So we're getting shuffled around from gate to gate. As hours go by, now 3 hours turns into 4 hours. Now we have the next flight that was supposed to come in after us. Now they show up, and they don't know what's going on. Next thing you know, after about, gosh, like 8 hours or something of this, there is a mob of people that has begun to form like I've never seen before. Human courtesy goes right out the window. Okay, this is like a stampede scenario.
I've got to ask, was it worse than on the cruise ship when backstory, when we had the snafu in the cruise ship with Carnival Cruise Lines.
Yeah. At least in the airport, worst case scenario, there's a door you can walk out and go somewhere else. On the cruise ship, you're just stuck on the ocean, so you don't even have that option.
Upset people.
Yeah, but it's very similar in attitude. And so this mob starts building, and everybody's really, really irritated, and finally it reaches a climax when this one guy decides to be the rebel rouser. And so he's one of these guys who has, you know, the loudest voice in the room. And so he turns around. He was one of the guys who had made it up to the counter, and I was somewhere in the middle of this mob. And the guy, he turns around, and he starts screaming at the top of his lungs. This guy could really project. And he says, "These people will tell you one thing and do another. They can all go to hell." And blah, and all of a sudden, cops just materialized out of nowhere. Okay, it's boom. And the cops were on top of this guy, and suddenly we realized, okay, this is the kind of stuff you see on TV, but you don't usually see in person. They drag this guy away, and they're warning everybody, you know, if you want to make this flight, you got to calm down. You know, we're not going to allow this type of conduct. Next thing I know, there's a woman bawling her eyes out, holding a baby. And she's really overdoing the crying. And she's, of course, everybody kind of parts the water so that she can make it up here to the desk. So this woman's crying, and she's rambling on in Spanish. And I had no idea what this woman's problem was. But there was another lady there who I kind of buddied up with, an older lady who was, you know, where you start forming bonds with people when you start having these shared,
right,
terrible times. And she spoke Spanish, and she said that this woman was saying to the ticket agent, if I don't get on the plane to Puerto Rico, my baby is going to die. That there's some medication that the baby must have. And so the ticket agent is saying, I can call the paramedics for you. There's nothing we can do to get you on the airplane right now, but we can call the paramedics for you. And the woman was saying, no, I have to go to Puerto Rico. And so, I mean, I started seeing all these just bizarro little, like, human dramatic scenarios play out. Finally, it became clear, like, I ain't leaving tonight. This ain't going to happen, right? So the best we can hope for now is to get a room. And, you know, when there's a problem and it's not due to an act of God, they're supposed to give you a motel room.
Right.
Well, they were turning a lot of people down for motel rooms. I got up there and I use my mojo or whatever. And so the woman says, okay, we've got a room for you at Motel 6. And I said, fine. At this point, you know, I've been on my feet for like 12 hours. Wonderful. Give it to me. And they said, come back tomorrow. Maybe you'll be able to get out of here. Maybe you won't. And I was thinking, okay, if I come back tomorrow and I can't leave, then I'm going to another airline and I'll do whatever I have to do. So I waited over an hour to get picked up to go to the Motel 6. So here it is. It's getting pretty late at night by the time I got to the Motel 6. And it was exactly, you know, it was definitely not the penthouse of Motel 6.
At least they left the light on for you.
But not for long, because I think the lights had like a timer, and if you didn't use them every 15 minutes, they would go out. So I get there, and I realize, what a rotten day. Everybody else is going to get into Puerto Rico before me, and I was supposed to be in there before them to set some things up. But, you know, whenever I'm in these situations, I figure I'm going to make the most of it. So I decided that here I am. I am stranded for a night in Dallas, Texas. I've only passed through Dallas before, never had any time. So I'm going to take a $100 cab ride to go to Dealey Plaza. I'm going to go check out the spot where John F. Kennedy was shot. Because, you know, we're friends with Jim Marnes. We know
where I was born was Dallas.
Yeah, well, you were born in Dallas. Okay. Have you ever been to Dealey Plaza?
I have not.
How about that? Well, you can see why you would have been right there with me, wouldn't you, Forrest?
Yes.
So I get in the car, get in the cab, drive to Dealey Plaza. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I will tell you what I experienced at Dealey Plaza, this, you know, infamous location where the President of the United States was gunned down in broad daylight. And then I will, you know, continue telling you how I eventually made it to Puerto Rico. And then Miss Wright and myself here will kind of take you through our experiences on the Isle of Enchantment. It's great to be able to come back here and share this with you because, hey, this is what we talk about on this program. We dig into the amazing, the remarkable, the extraordinary, the downright weird. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. It's the show where the unusual becomes usual, and it's called Speaking of Strange.
Come on.
Yes, speaking of strange is sort of becoming the Puerto Rico show, but that's okay. It's right in the middle of the Bermuda Triangle. In fact, I believe the point of the Bermuda Triangle is there in San Juan. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. It's called La Garita del Diablo. I bet most of you know what that word means. Diablo. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. And one of the reasons that we're talking so much about this is that, you know, I'm working on a new TV project down in the Bermuda Triangle and the islands there. And since I'm going to be down there a little bit more this year, I'm going to be taking some groups on some expeditions similar to the one that Shelley just went on. And what a great, perfect selection of friends that we had on this last trip, huh, Shelley?
Perfect.
We actually knew every one of them. We were all friends, and all of us, except for C. Eric Scott, had gone to Transylvania and all over Romania less than a year ago together.
Yeah.
So we got our own little international
core group.
Expedition group, yeah.
We're ready for another adventure, by the way.
Well, I am too. I'm Mr. Adventure. So, it's not that difficult when you live in the United States to make it to some very cool places and back. You know, we've got a pretty good transportation system most of the time in place. Things could have definitely been a lot trickier. I mean, for example, I saw on the news, and of course I thought it was amazing that I ended up right there in the middle of a national news story when the airline thing happened. I saw on the news how that some people, after going through all that, finally made it to their motel room, and the motel would not honor the voucher. Yeah. Can you imagine that?
Insult to injury.
So at that point, you either have to figure out how to bribe your way through this with your wallet or turn around and go back to the airport, and a lot of people just ended up sleeping on the floor at the airport. So I was one of the luckier ones, if you consider that. So here I was, stranded in Dallas, Texas for a night. Hungry as all get out, so, you know, the first thing I did was, well, I didn't want to be out too late because I was going to get up really, really early in the morning to see if I could, you know, that would help me somehow get a seat somewhere on the flights out. But, so I took this cab to Dealey Plaza. Now, I've read all the books about the JFK assassination, seen all the movies, all the documentaries. You know, Jim Mars, he is the expert on this. He's a friend of ours, Forrest, and we've had many conversations with him about it. But there's no substitute for being there yourself and just taking a look at things. And so here it is. It's nighttime. I'm in Dealey Plaza. I'm looking around at all these buildings, and I'm not exactly sure precisely what happened where. And as fate would have it, there I ran into this, like, crazy old conspiracy theorist guy who was hanging out there. I was like, yes! Bring it on! Tell me everything! And sure enough, this guy, he takes me around, and he's like, hey, this is where this happened, this is where that happened, and this is where this bullet ricocheted from there, supposedly. And he, as he's pointing everything out, you've probably seen this on TV, at the spot where Kennedy's head sort of explodes, you know, back to the left, back to the left, there is an X in the middle of the street. And it's really odd and unsettling because whenever there's a break in traffic, some tourist will run out to that spot and like, geez, you know, and they'll take their picture. And it's like, it's kind of disrespectful, isn't it? But, oh, well, I guess I'll do it, too. So I run out into the middle of the street and I stand there because mainly I want to see the line of sight between the book depository window where Oswald was, supposedly, and where Kennedy was shot. So I stand there and I look up and I see that, yes, this was a good shot, so to speak, but certainly, it's not impossible. I mean, it's not, you wonder
like, are you going to get there and be like, whew, that's a long ways off? No, it really wasn't that far off. I can see how that Oswald or someone else could have made that shot. But what really impressed me most of all was walking up to the spot on the grassy knoll. Because when you get to that spot that you keep hearing about on the grassy knoll and you look at that, you're like, that is the shot right there. I mean, when you see the way that the bullet appears, now I know that there's the explanation is, well, it looks like he shot from the front right and his head goes back into the left, but actually he was shot from the back and his head just turned back toward the bullet. Okay, that's the traditional Warren report, you know. But to me, just, you know, and I've seen on, like, Discovery Channel documentaries how they shoot dummies in the back of the head and they reproduce that motion of the head going back to the left, and it's very convincing. But to me, it always just felt like Kennedy was shot from the front at that point. And that grassy knoll is just the most perfect angle to shoot the president right over his right eye there. And it's difficult to stand there and not think that that shot came from there. So, you know, triangulation is what a lot of the conspiracy theorists say. Yes, there was a guy behind him, there was a guy over here, and a guy over there. And so I can tell you that I left Dealey Plaza just as unresolved as everybody else, but definitely open to the conspiracy that I feel like there was a gunman on that grassy knoll. Even standing there, it just felt like this is the shot that killed the man. So, you know, that's all we can do. Go there and just check it out for yourself. And, you know, people have been studying this for decades and shooting lasers everywhere. But the problem is you put out 10 different versions of the truth. Nobody knows what to believe.
Well, and traffic is going in a different direction now, is it not? From when... From 1963, when he was shot, traffic was going one direction. Now, since they've changed the traffic pattern, you go the other direction.
I'm not certain about that, but I definitely know that they did change the route around in general for the president. And, you know, there are all these questions about why did they take this route as opposed to that route, because one route's more dangerous than the other's not more direct and less dangerous. And all. I don't know, but... I think there was something to this conspiracy. So, long story now getting shorter. The next day, yes, I finally made it out on the first airplane. It was a godsend. But I still didn't get into Puerto Rico until later that night after everybody else was there. And by the time I got there, you guys were out having a good party in the meantime, right, Shelly?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so you weren't missing me too much.
Oh, of course we were. We raised many, many glasses in your honor.
Oh, what a wonderful feeling it was to touch down in Puerto Rico after that endeavor, that ordeal. So anyway, yeah, we get there, and everybody, you know, the group's like half lit at this point. You guys have been at the Parrot Club.
It was quite good.
Yeah, and after that we went out and we took a little walk around the city at night. And so we go heading down a street, and this little Puerto Rican guy comes walking up with a big lizard. And the lizard is wearing a pink dress. Am I making this up, Shelley?
No, you're not. I have pictures.
So it's a big iguana with a pink dress. And he comes walking up and says, hey, you know, you want to hold Carmen? And I say, absolutely. So he puts this lizard on my shoulder. Now, it's a little creepy to have, like, a strange lizard. And by strange, I mean it's not like we're friends or anything. This lizard doesn't know me.
You don't know it?
Yeah. And next thing I know, this lizard's right here next to my shoulder. And wearing a little pink dress, Eric's shooting me, and I feel like, well, I'm on camera, I got to do something cute here. So I turn and I kiss this lizard forest. And did I not, Shelley?
Yes, you did.
I kissed this lizard in its little pink dress.
Well, I saw some of the girls you dated before you married Lauren. So. Well,
yeah, exactly. You know, it's half dozen to one or something like that. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll tell you a little. And by the way, after the lizard was gone, Justin there says, oh, my God, you guys are going to get a disease. You've got to wash up immediately, because Shelly had the lizard on her as well. We'll tell you about that, and also when we come back, what Justin found when we went into a cave where a lot of ritual sacrifice has taken place. We're recounting the recent expedition to the Bermuda Triangle, to Puerto Rico, the Isle of Enchantment. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. Coconut water in it, but it didn't just taste like coconut water. I don't know how to describe the taste, but it was very refreshing, and I realized, wow, I need to become the importer of Coco Rico, the most exotic carbonated beverage from the islands. And, Shelly, maybe you could help me distribute it all over the country.
Mm.
You want to go into the Coco Rico business?
I'd rather go into the Donku rum business.
Yeah, Donku, Medaya. And by the way, folks, if you want to know more about what we do in Puerto Rico, you know, I've been talking about this incredible ghost photo from the Reynolds Mansion, and I was on Coast to Coast AM recently talking about it. If you go to joshuapwarren.com, you'll find some enhancements of that image, as well as some historical background and a historical photo that accompanies it. And you'll find a link there to paranormalpuertorico.com, so you can learn more about these expeditions down there if I have anything planned. Right now I'm thinking of doing one in late June, possibly. So, joshuapwarren.com, and you really need to look at the enhancement of this amazing photo. Also, as I mentioned, tonight is going to be the last new Speaking of Strange for a while, because I am heading back down to Puerto Rico to work on this TV project. In the meantime, I'm going to be working with Forrest and Mobius and a few other technicians here to get set up so that I can broadcast from Puerto Rico. So, Forrest, you will be in the studio. Shelly, you'll be in the studio. I'll be in Puerto Rico. And it'll be interesting to see if there's any, like, weird transmission stuff that pops up.
It would be. Also, in the meantime, again, like I said, if there's a show anyone wants to hear, get in touch with me at SOS Hardwood on Twitter.
At SOS Hardwood. And
I'll do my best to find that show. We've got 10 years of shows to pull from.
That's right. So we'll have best ofs until we get all the technical bugs worked out to bring you these brand-new broadcast from the Bermuda Triangle, and it's going to be weird. It'll sound a little different. I don't know how it's going to work, but I know that it will be an interesting new chapter.
Through the magic of radio, we'll make it work.
Yes. So, Shelly, you got the lizard on your shoulder.
Yes.
Did you kiss it?
No, I did not.
Hmm.
I wasn't going to kiss that thing. Who knows where it's been? But it was perched on my shoulder.
Are you a fan of lizards?
I do like lizards.
Mm-hmm.
I do.
So we wrapped that night up. The next day, we had a big day, just action-packed. Long day, full of exercise. We took a big trip. We hooked up with Manuel, our guide, and we piled into a van, and we started the day off heading toward the El Yunque rainforest, which we'll talk a little bit about in a moment. It's the only tropical rainforest that is a U.S. national park. But along the way, we stopped at this big, huge, crazy-looking cavern, a big cave, called the Cave of Maria de la Cruz. And this is a cave where a lot of the locals go, and it's sort of way out in the middle of nowhere. It's in a rural, rugged area. Some of the locals go who practice Santeria and similar types of island mysticism. You walk in and you find that there are sort of natural stone altars, and they're just covered with candle drippings where people have gone in there and conducted these rituals. So there are all kinds of rocks and debris, of course, scattered about the floor of the cave. And At one point, Justin goes, hey, check this out, and he reaches down and he pulls up a bone. Now, I know that ancient human remains have been found in this cave. So he tosses this bone over, and the bone is obviously, you know, it's worn looking. It's kind of gray. You can tell it's been there a while. And it looked like a rib bone. Wouldn't you say, Shelley Wright?
I would.
And so we had our friend El Brujo with us, we'll call him, and we brought it over to him and said, what do you think about this? And he says, oh, well, a lot of times they sacrifice animals in this cave, and he said it's most likely the rib of a goat that they've sacrificed. And so we talked a little bit about it, and I thought, gosh, what an interesting artifact to bring back and study at the museum, at the Asheville Mystery Museum. Go to hauntedasheville.com if you want to learn about that. That's where we do our ghost tours out of there and our ghost hunts. So I ask El Brujo, do you think it's going to bring me any bad juju, you know, if I take this sacrificial bone back with me? And he said, no, you'll be fine. So I did. So now this bone is in the Asheville Mystery Museum. It's not labeled or anything at this point, but if you go in there, you'll see it. It's over near the, interestingly enough, the vampire display. This is the bone from this cave in Puerto Rico. Tell you something else interesting. Right next to the cave, there was a big tree. I can't remember what it's called. But every time the wind would blow, it would look like cotton balls were flowing off of the tree. And Manuel told us that this material, which he picked up and handed to us, which was very silky and soft, is what was at one time used inside of life preservers. But it was just an odd-looking thing to see all these little, like, silky cotton balls flowing off. And apparently this tree only matures and does that every 3 years. So it was kind of special that we got to see that. You got to touch it, right, Shelley?
I did.
Yeah. How would you describe it?
Very silky, very, very kind of spongy, silky. It was luxurious.
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 Well, we'll make you a coat out of that then.
Okay.
So we end up making it to the rainforest. And did you know that it rains a lot in the rainforest? Forest?
No, I didn't.
Who'd have thunk that? I've been to the rainforest numerous times. I have never seen it this rainy in the rainforest.
Torrential rain.
I mean, you're the whole time you're walking next to a stream, and this thing is just raging down the mountain. There have been times in the past when I've actually paused and gotten into the stream and just chilled out, and the water's all nice and warm, and not that day.
Oh, no, there was no pausing.
Yeah, you would have died if you jumped into that.
Right.
It'll be like jumping in a big toilet bowl.
Ew.
Yeah. It would just... And then you'd hit the rocks and be dead. So, but it was amazing to see that much water, wasn't it? Just, you know, the whole way. Because we hiked probably a couple hours, I guess, starting at the top of the mountain, down the mountain. And right when you get on the trail to begin the walk through the rainforest, there is... And I have to be careful talking to you about this. There's a difference between rainforest and rainforest. So you'll know what I'm talking about.
Correct.
There is a sign there with a mongoose on it. And it says, beware of the mongoose. And so, you know, I do a little bit on camera like, well, I knew there were chupacabra around here. I didn't know there were killer mongoose or geese or gooses.
Gooses.
But at one point in time, there were so many snakes in the area that they imported these mongoose, we'll call them. And now, you know, they're out of control, apparently, and they're kind of rabid. And I have seen them before there. I have seen a mongoose there one time running right around that area. So they say, don't feed them, just steer clear of the mongoose.
There was nothing running around there. It was so rainy, it drove everything away.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Usually you see a lot more wildlife and... You know, the weather was pretty hardcore that day.
But did you find a coquet toad?
For the first time, no. A coquille.
Cookies.
Yeah, for the very first time ever. Now, it's hard to find a Cokie anyway. Cokies are tiny little frogs.
Now, did Manuel look?
Yeah, he was looking. Manuel can't find one, you know it's rough. I mean, Manuel, you know, there was once a man named the Crocodile Hunter. Manuel is Cokie Hunter. And you can hear the Cokies everywhere. They sound like... something like that.
Oh, yeah.
They're all over the place. But we never actually could find a Cokie. But we did go through some areas where the Chupacabra has been seen. And there was even some graffiti of what looked like a Chupacabra at one point on a little shelter. And you may or may not realize, I've talked about this before, when we talk about the Chupacabra, we're not talking about a mangy coyote that you hear about in Texas or Arizona. No, this is an alien, an upright alien, and it's about 4 feet tall. And when we come back, I'll tell you what you're supposed to do if you happen to be lucky or unlucky enough to encounter the real Chupacabra. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
They only come a town about twice a year. You buy 100 pounds of yeast and some copper line. Everybody knew that you made moonshine. I'm a revenue man on a granddaddy's bed.
He loves me. I knew it!
Ariel! Stop talking crazy.
I've got to see him again. Tonight. Scuttle knows where he lives.
Ariel, please. Will you get your head out of the clouds and back in the water where it belongs?
I'll swim up to his castle. Then Flounder will splash around to get his attention and then we'll go...
Down here is your home. Ariel, listen to me. The human world, it's a mess. Life under the sea is better than anything they got up there.
Seaweed is always greener in somebody else's lake. You dream about going up there, but that is a big mistake. Just look at the world around you, right here on the ocean floor. Such wonderful things around you. What more are you looking for? Under the sea, under the sea. Darling, it's better down where it's wetter. Take it from me. Up on the shore, they work all day. Out in the sun, they slave away. While we're devoting full time, you're floating under the sea. Come here, all the fish is happy as after the waves they roll. The fish on the land ain't happy. The shark 'cause they in the bowl. But fish in the bowl is lucky. They in for a worse of fate. One day when the boss get hungry,
yes, you go beyond the fish.
Go under the sea, under the sea. Nobody beat us, fry us, and eat us in fricassee. We want the land folks not to cook. Under the sea, we have the hook. We got no trouble. Life is the bubbles under the sea.
Under the sea.
Under the sea. Seems like this week here, we got to be here naturally.
Naturally.
Even the sturgeon and the ray. Did the earth start to play? We got the spirit, you got to hear it. Under the sea.
And guess what? On this trip, Shelley Wright got to look under the sea for the first time. She learned to snorkel finally, Forrest.
All right.
Yay!
It's a whole different world.
It is.
In some of the choppiest water around.
Yes.
And that's tough to snorkel when it's really choppy and the water's splashing up into your snorkel.
Ooh.
Yeah, but Shelley, what do you think now that you've done some snorkeling?
It was amazing, but I can't wait until I get to see fish the next time.
Yeah,
it's just too rough.
You didn't get to see anything, any wildlife?
No, just some rocks.
It was so choppy that it was stirring up sediment, so the water wasn't all that clear.
Aww.
Yeah. And, I mean, you could see, but...
But you didn't get the experience of...
No, not real snorkeling, like where you go out and you're on a reef, you know.
But
so.
I learned to snorkel in the Bermuda Triangle.
That's right.
And you came back?
And I came back.
Now you're prepared for next time.
Yes.
But the water felt great. It was,
it did.
Yeah. And we had a great day there at the beach, the Escambrón. And especially nice since the day before, strenuous day, hiking through the rainforest. It's a very slick, narrow pathway. You have to be extremely careful. You'll break your leg if you're not. And yeah, the funny thing is they say that if you encounter the chupacabra, now mind you, the chupacabra originates from Puerto Rico. This alien-type being that's 4 feet tall with big black eyes and spines that run down its back, the kind of little front arms, if you encounter this thing and it locks eyes with you and you are overcome with that inevitable paralyzing fear, which you certainly would, the best thing you can do, they say, is to freeze a moment and then begin to hum or whistle a soothing tune like a lullaby as you slowly back away. And as soon as you're out of the line of sight, haul ass. But for those people who have not known that and have encountered the chupacabra, they say that sometimes this sort of energy field that almost looks like a translucent cloud will begin to whip around the being, and suddenly it will just spirit away into the sky, like the Tasmanian devil flying off somewhere. Strangest thing, and yet people who have misunderstood what the real chupacabra is have applied that to some of these more ordinary animals that have been found in the U.S. because they're just looking at the goat-sucking part. But these creatures, they're blood drinkers, and you could say that a chupacabra is a type of vampire or a vampiric being. Wouldn't you say, Miss Wright?
Yes.
So we did not see a chupacabra, but we definitely, Eric and I documented some weird markings and claws that had been digging around on various parts of the floor. Would that have been a chupacabra or just a mongoose? I don't know. So we left the rainforest, and then we stopped for some roadside food. One of my favorites, a pincho. You never heard of a pincho, had you, Shelley?
No, I haven't.
A pincho is, and there are all these recipes for pinchos around the island. And every old guy you meet has his own pincho recipe. But essentially, a pincho is a meat, usually something like grilled chicken, what they call pollo a la parrilla. And it is grilled on a skewer and slathered with a special barbecue-y type sauce and handed to you with a big fluff of white bread. And they only cost in the neighborhood of $2.50. And, ugh.
Delicious.
Yeah.
I wanted another one.
Yeah, yeah. And let me tell you, all over the island, you find different types of pinchos, and they just keep getting better and better. So, yeah, a pincho and a nice medallia to wash it down, a cold medallia, you're talking, what, $3.50?
Exactly.
It's an excellent, excellent deal. So that's always fun to get, you know, legitimate food there, native food from the side of the road, if you will. Okay, we're coming up on a break. When we come back, we're going to tell you about the bioluminescent bay. Now, you've heard me talk about this before, but this is the first time that we've ever decided to kayak into the bio bay. And, I almost crashed thanks to C. Eric Scott. I'm going to put all the blame on him. He wasn't paying attention about how to steer the kayak properly. I know he's an Eagle Scout and all that, but we almost got into a fight with a yacht. Guess who would win that fight? I'll tell you about that and more when we return. I'm Joshua P. Warren, the show where the unusual becomes usual. It's called Speaking of Strange. 13 months on baby.